Gnosis. Gnosis is direct knowledge. Knowledge that is spontaneous, that comes from deep within, that has no pause in it, and doesn't come through any agency. That's gnosis. Now, the first we hear of gnosis in history is in the early days of Christianity. And before Christianity, despite the presence of the Jewish, which was a unified whole, as it were, there were many sects, S-E-C-T-S, that were endeavoring, like all men and women, to find something more real. And one of these sects was Gnosticism, or the Gnostics. And with the spread of the Jesus message, the Gnostics saw something in the Jesus message. It said that they saw something in Christianity. But from my research and my direct knowledge and ability to see things straight, although I have to have a basis of some information, it couldn't have been Christianity, because Christianity didn't start until Paul started. And Paul didn't have his vision on the road to Damascus until well after Jesus was dead. He had his vision, might have been 20 years after, 27 years after. And it was he that called Christianity Christianity, because he was the first one to refer to Jesus as Christ. So the Gnostics couldn't have really been supporters, as it were, or followers of Christianity, because there was no such thing as Christianity to begin with, because he that Paul called Christ was the Messiah, the Jewish word Messiah, for the Saviour of the race, the Jewish race. It was only for the Jewish race. And all his disciples were Jews, immediate disciples, and he was the Messiah, and considered to be so by his closest disciples. Christianity didn't start for another, as I say, 30 or 40 years by the look of it. But the Gnostics were around at the beginning of the Jesus era. And they must have seen something in this extraordinary teaching, because this extraordinary teaching was, come all. Come all. You don't have to be a noble, you don't have to be a Pharisee, you don't have to be this, you don't have to be that, you can be a slave, and everybody is welcome to just hear the words of Jesus. That was very popular. But the Gnostics, who came, it seems to me, after Christianity got moving, and the church fathers, church fathers, that was the beginning, the ones who were most to benefit from this movement of Christianity, not Jesus teaching, not the Jesus teaching of the Messiah, but of a thing called Christ, which Jesus never called himself. And Paul, of course, never met Jesus, and said it wasn't necessary to have met the original Jesus, because he was taught by the vision of Jesus on the road to Damascus. How he knew it was Jesus. It wasn't Jesus, of course. It was an aspect of God. But that's what Christians do. They think it's Jesus, and it's just an aspect of God, and only an aspect of God. Any rate, so these Gnostics, they differed They differed with the Christian message of the early fathers of the church. Because the early fathers of the church, as the church today, this monolith of Christian religion, insisted that everybody believe what they were told. They must believe what the church laid down, what the fathers laid down. And anyone who didn't believe was not a Christian, because you had to believe in the dogma of the church, what the fathers laid down. You had to believe in that. That was called having faith, faith in Jesus. The Gnostics said, no, no, that's not right to have, just have faith in something or other. That's not right to follow a tradition. What we know is direct truth, and that's what we're concerned with, direct truth. Well, you can imagine what this means to the deacons and the priests and the bishops when they've got a nice little established religion going, in which they have power over other people but not over themselves. They reacted against this heresy of Gnosticism. And they outlawed it as quickly as possible. Now, heresy is a contrary, something that's contrary to the established or orthodox doctrine. And, of course, this is utterly collides with Christian worship of the past, especially somebody who's dead. The Gnostics said, no, 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 it must be direct knowledge. And so the bishops and the priests and the deacons closed ranks, and gradually they forced the Gnostics out, and the Gnostics and the Gnostic principle disappeared. And it still disappeared. I don't know where Gnosticism or the Gnostic principle exists anywhere in the world, except here that is speaking to you now. But I am Gnostic. I am always here. I always appear somewhere. For I am direct knowledge. I am the Gnostic principle, endeavoring to get you to have direct knowledge, which is your right, to have no priests in between, to have that which was smothered underneath dogma and belief of religions. Doesn't matter what religion it is, there cannot be Gnosticism in any established religion, unless it could be a hidden part of some established religion. But I don't know of any, because Gnosticism is not hidden. I am Gnostic. I am the principle of direct knowledge. And so I have been endeavoring to communicate to you not to believe in anything, to tear everything down, every belief, the Christian church, to throw it out, Islam, everything out, so that you have nothing between you and your God, the mystery, and not be in servitude to pious priestly notions and concepts. So I reveal myself to you now. I am direct knowledge of God. And that's what I have endeavored through my great knowledge that comes from God, to demonstrate to you that you don't need any belief, and yet belief is 2,000 years deep in us. So we were out in the lobby outside the meeting place here, and there was a notice up, Family Church. So I couldn't help talking to the people, as a lot of you would have gathered around, and others might not have, might have heard it but couldn't be there. So I just want to tell you what I was saying. Now, churches are an invention of priests. Priests who are unenlightened, pious priests. And they invented churches. Because churches are not necessary for the worship of God. And I was saying that your body is the temple of God, like mine is. And because I am intelligent, and you are intelligent, more or less than I am, right? What are you intelligent for? To work up a phony Einstein theory, like Einstein's theory has got nothing to do with truth or love? Is that what your intelligence is for? To write some popular novel? Is that what your intelligence is for? To make a movie, which is all fantasy? Is that what your intelligence is for? Well, that's a reflected intelligence, you see. It's not real intelligence. Real intelligence is to keep my body clear so that my body belongs to God. And what is God, Barry? God's nothing. So, what have you got inside your body, Barry? Nothing. Absolutely nothing have I got inside Barry's body. Nothing is in there. And that's why I'm joyous. I don't have anything arising. I don't have any problems coming up, you know, difficulties, worries, you know, all those sort of things, you know, the burden. I don't have that. But I'm an ordinary guy. I'm not some God-like, free John talks about himself being a God. Okay, he might have realized God, but he's not God. But at any rate, just because you realize God doesn't mean you are God. To be God is to be extraordinary, extraordinary, ordinary. And you can't be God, you just got to be emptied so that joy, which is the love of God, your love of God, of nothing, or that extraordinary, inexplicable thing, or its love of you, it doesn't matter, the love of God, right? Which, what's the of? Huh, doesn't matter. That's the joy, and that keeps the temple clear. And nobody's ever, well, people say this, I know it's been said before, but I want to demonstrate it to you. I am the temple. I am the worship in the temple, right? I am the Jewish temple, right? It's over in Jerusalem, and all down there bowing to it and all the sort of things over there in Jerusalem. Where the hell is Jerusalem? Where is it? I'm not interested in where Jerusalem is. I'm interested in the temple. And so Jesus is supposed to have gone into the temple and chucked out the money changers and tipped over their tables. Poor guy sitting there, you know, doing the business, because you couldn't take Roman money into the temple. You had to use shekels. It had to be converted, because the Bible doesn't tell you this, but it had to be converted into Jewish money for holiness sakes. So he goes in and he tips over all the temples, these poor guys, just doing their job, but quite rightly so, because he had a knowledge of the temple. But it wasn't that temple at all. That's all imagination. That's all story form, historical stories, which is clouded out, made by priests. All the priests write all the religious stories. Priests, modern priests as well as ancient priests. All miss the point of the master who says, I am the temple. My body's the temple like yours is the temple. Joy is in the temple because God is in the temple, because good is in the temple. Not that I am good. I'm nothing. It just is. Are you getting it? Are you going to believe these priests? Well, the whole world does. They've got a family church down there. You're my family. You're my family. I love to speak to you of God and truth and love and nothing arising and worship of God, the thing inside of you that every single one of you has knowledge of in your own experience. Not in what the priests have told you and the silly gospels have told you and the Jesuses and the Muhammads and all the rest of them have told you. All made by priests. Let's get down to the point of it for God's sake. There's only one eye in the universe and there's only one body in the universe as far as you are concerned, the individual, and that's your body and your universe and your eye and your everything. That's the only truth. The person next to you is not your truth. And you busy yourself. You busy yourself worrying about all the people around you and all the starving millions and all the rest of it and all what the priests have told you, religious priests. Waste of time. Out with a lot of them. You don't need anything but what you are, your own intelligence. And I know all the people are speaking like I do, and they drum up all the Christians, drum up all the emotions and that sort of thing, and so do everybody else, drum up knots of emotion. An emotion's supposed to be a sign of love. An emotion is not a sign of love at all. It's a sign of pollution. It's a sign of experience. Try to get a bit of selfish experience from something that's otherwise dead. A church is dead. Why do you think they've got what they call a Eucharist, taken a piece of a bun or whatever it is he hands you and put it on your tongue and drink the old wine down, right? You drink the wine down and you say, oh, I'm holy. Why you got to do that? Because you want a bit of entertainment, because it's so dull in there. It's so lifeless in there. Big stone walls. Big stone walls. Tortured, if you're a Roman Catholic, tortured statues of something on man on a cross, whoever he was, bleeding with his side open. Anything to do with God? Not a thing to do with God. Not a thing to do with God. To do with priests who have hypnotized you, like the scientists have hypnotized you. You've been hypnotized by the society and all your children are being hypnotized because you're not with the master consciousness, which I am, the lover of God, the lover of truth, the lover of death, the lover of life. Well, that's what you're with anyway. So don't think that I'm getting angry, will you? Right. Okay. Because I'm passionate. Life is a passion to me. Love is a passion to me. I'm vital. I can't help it because I got the God in me. I'm not the God. I'm nothing. But I got a temple here. And I keep it holy. And that's what you can do too. But you've got to clear your space, haven't you? All the priests in there talking to you. You see, this I that I am in that body listening to these words, it is an amazing phenomenon. It arises out of living matter. So it arises from the moment you're born, it's starting to be there because it needs experience. I need something to reflect on. And as God is nothing, and as you're born with nothing to speak of, I'm not there. There's only nothing there. But as I get experience, I get stronger. I and experience parallel each other. So as the baby gets stronger and starts to walk, it gets more I, doesn't it? Your parents, you know, more I in the child. As a teenager gets teenaged and you get the sexual energy, and you've got a real I there. An I is reflecting on the sex energy. I is reflecting on its own independence, its lack of self-knowledge, which gives it a certain certainty in it that it's going to live forever. And is also in the middle of that is itself. Because as you get experience, you start to get self. And self consists of emotion, all the hurts. Even the hurts in the child as it sat in its high chair, trying to do what the mummy and daddy said, teach them to pick up some peas on a spoon. And it's trying to do this and it's... And it drops the peas all over the place and a terrible frustration comes into the child sometimes. And that's an emotion. And that doesn't go up to heaven or out into the space and get dispersed. That stays inside. That becomes itself. And then it falls over trying to walk. And eventually, because it's very close to walking, it gets frustrated because it can't walk and it falls over. More emotion. So as you get, and then when you get in the teenage years and you've got the sexual urge, especially the man, because man's driven by sex, right? Woman wants love. Man wants sex, right? Teenage boys want sex. Teenage girls want romance and love, right? Oh, two different worlds collide. Boom, right. Emotion. Woman gets emotional. Man gets emotional. He feels a failure. She feels that she's to blame, right? Woman always feels that she's to blame. She takes the blame, right? Man feels a failure for a while, but soon gets up there with the old testosterone going through him. He's feeling okay again. So you're going to have another go. The woman, meanwhile, is all her dreams are punctured, you know, those have about romance and all that sort of stuff the young girl has. The young man soon punctures those, gets rid of those. Anyway, all this is self, you're getting disappointment, disillusionment, a failure, self-doubt. All this stuff's gathering in you. His experience, and that's part of experience, is I am reflecting on this stuff in the middle here. I'm reflecting on myself, and what's myself consists of all the unhappy emotions that you've had since you were born. So sometimes you don't know where they come from, such as anger, resentment, jealousy, fear. Very deep one. Fear of love. Afraid to love. Might lose my independence. She might take it from me. I'll only go so far because I must save my independence. That's man. Woman. Oh, I can't stand it. It's kind of turned my back on man. Take another woman. That's much easier to love another woman than to love him. At least she's soft and I get a bit of love. You know, all this variation, all the self-gathering up, self-building up, building up, building up. I am now, I reflect on my memory, which is my memory of experience. I reflect on that. I have to remember the good old days, you know, the good old days when I was in the Air Force or when I was somewhere else and I tell the story. I reflect on my mental experience, but mostly I'm reflecting on my emotional experience, myself. My emotional self is myself. And that makes everything personal. Personalizing everything. It's called selfishness. Selfishness. There's no such word as love-ishness, is there? There's no such word as truth-ishness, is there? But there is a word called selfishness, isn't there? And that's what we all are. And I, in that body, reflect on that selfishness, that unhappiness, and therefore I then know I am unhappy and depressed, and I want something different to what I am. And so I try to get more experience, trying to get what I think I want, and that turns into more unhappiness by trying and wanting. So that's what we're talking about. There's a few new people here, but even you older people need to be reminded. You need to be retold all the time. That's why you come back to me. Because nobody's going to tell you the truth out there. They're going to play you some music or something, or do some chanting, or play some incense or something, and give you a nice story and make you feel comfortable. I'm not here to make you feel comfortable. I'm here to give you the truth so that you become intelligent. Really intelligent. And so that you are in charge of your life instead of being in control of your life, which your eye is and your decisions are. Controlled your life, the whole life. To be in charge of your life only means that you have to love that which you know inside of you. Each, every single one of you has the knowledge of it. Something that is inexplicable inside of you that you call good or right, or I call God. Now you have that knowledge. No matter how fine it might be, it's there when you're with me, because I am the love of God. And I in that body is reflecting on what I am speaking of. And when I speak of the love of God and of truth and of death and try to get you to get rid of all this historicity that you've got inside of you, all the priests, you become more intelligent and you start to, in your own experience, hear the truth in your own experience. That's all I'm here for you to be the truth that you are by listening to the truth that I speak in your own experience. You are the center of the entire universe. Only you in that body. I in that body is the only one here. It doesn't matter how enlightened the masters are. It doesn't matter how enlightened Jesus was. What's that got to do with you? It's meaningless. You are the one that has to be enlightened. I in that body. And fortunately, I'm here to help you. I can only help you by giving you the truth. And breaking the hypnotic attachment to your selfishness, to your own emotions, to your own person. And I'm not asking you to believe anything that I say. If you believe anything that I say, you are a fool. You should listen to what I say in your own experience, and you will then know whether I am speaking the truth. Because you are far deeper and intelligent than you think you, than I think I am in that body. So instead of relying on your memory or your emotions to see whether I speak the truth, you stay in your own experience. It's what brought you here. Because you need some more of it. You need the affirmation of your own experience because you don't get it out there. You get lots of experience out there, lots of old garbage spoken all the time, like spoken all around the university here now, including the Christian church and everything, all garbage. Now, surely you know the golden rule of do unto others as you would have them do unto you, right? That's the golden rule. And that wasn't a Jesus rule, that was a Jewish rule, because he was a rabbi. And the Jews had only one God, when everyone else had 15 gods, 20 gods, 100 gods. At least the Jews had one God, when all the other immature cults and beliefs had so many other gods. I want to disabuse you of your gods, which are science is your God. Science is your children's God. Your emotions are your God that you worship. Your memory is your God that you can't help but love enough to keep thinking about things. They're your God. Your God is what you love. Well, I don't love thinking. I don't love pain. Of emotional pain. I don't love conflict inside of me. I don't love anger. So I don't have it. I won't have it. Because I don't live in a vacuum, you see. I substitute that with the love of God, the love of the unnameable, which I started this little bit on, saying, you know about this thing inside of you which is inexplicable, which the scientists don't know about. That's one of the great mysteries of science. The great scientific thinkers all believed in God, all acknowledged that God in their futile attempt to find the truth in matter. like Einstein and all the other wonderful scientific thinkers. There's a constant, amongst the real thinkers, there's a constant recognition of God. But there's not the living of God. The life is punctured with the lack of love in all of them. Doubts and fears, and women weeping at home, and children uninformed about what God is and what spoils this God that we are inside of us. Emotions and fears and doubts and looking for the truth in matter, which all scientists are endeavoring to do. Instead of knowing the truth is inside the temple of your body, and nobody can name what it is except you can love it, but you can't know it. You got it. Have you got that? You can love the truth, but you can't name it. You can only love it. So you can realize God, but you can't be God. But you can love it. You've got to stop trying to find it. So I heard this song the other day, and a wonderful, wonderful piece of music and words. Jesus Christ Superstar. Wonderful example of inspiration in terms of worldly terms and things. And as part of it goes into a sort of a chant, I want to see my God, I want to see my God, I want to know my God, I want to know my God, I want that sort of thing, right? But there's not a word about how to see your God or how to know your God. Not a word about it. So they all fall down, they all become entertainment. While you get angry at any time at all, you are blocking your perception of God or your knowledge of God. So I was speaking about clearing your space, wasn't I? Well, what are we talking about? Clearing your inner space. What do you think your life's about? I mean, we can get it down to very, very few ingredients. Instead of all the mixed up that the priests have given you and all the junk, we can get it down. You have inner space. That's where you think. Now, would anybody like to question this, please? Look, really, we got to get down to nitty-gritties. I don't want anyone saying, oh, well, there he goes again, or yeah, I don't know about this. Where do you think? Now, if you think you think in your brain, I don't know that you've got a brain, you see. I don't know that. I can't see your brain. I do know that you have inner space. Because I know that God can be realized in the mirror of inner space. Even while you have a brain, I know that God can be realized, an inexplicable, incredible inflow of gnosis or knowledge. I know that as knowledge, not as I, the knower. But to get that, I have to be serious about my life. Do you think everybody out there is being serious about their life? Do you think all the students are being serious about their life in this university? Do you think the professors are being serious about their life? No chance. They're being serious about their living. Now, there's quite a difference, please, about living and life. Life is holy. Life is the mirror inside your body. What else do you think it is? It's life that allows living to happen. It's life in your body that allows your body to breathe. And that's the mirror. Now, it's no good being serious about your living. Although you got to be, I mean, if you're a scientist, fair enough. You got to get in the, or a biologist, you got to get in the microscope, you got to get in the telescope, and you got to do all those things. But you've got to put this life first before the living experience, because you're never going to find anything outside that's true, that's real. It'll only be true for now. Like your body is sitting in a certain position now. That's true for now. But you've moved already. It's only true for now. Right, you've moved and you've stopped now. It's true for now. It's true for now. My hand is true for now while it's there, but it's not true for now, is it? Because everything's moving. True for now, true for now, true for now. Now, true for now is not the truth. The truth never moves. And everything that's discovered out there is true for now. But it's not necessarily true next moment. So your love life is true for now. Let's say you're in love, right? And that's the most beautiful thing between man and woman. The most beautiful thing on this earth is to have true and real love between man and woman, indeed. But it's only true for now. You have to apply. You have to apply your intelligence to this wonderful, wonderful interaction that's called love between man and woman. You have to apply, both have to apply enormous intelligence to keep it free of familiarity. Even if you've realized God, that's great. If you've realized that one section of God, and there are many sections of God to realize once you get rid of the junk, doesn't mean that your love life's going to be right. If you're going to make your love life right, you've got to be very intelligent and very present in your body, both of you, alert. And not as a stress or a strain, because love is not stressed or strained. Love is just alert without being alert. You can't let it become familiar. You can't take it for granted, because it's only true for now, remember. And everything here changes, if it can. Everything moves and passes. Everything. Everything ages here. Everything gets decrepit here. But I do not get decrepit, I who love. I who reflect on the love of God. I do not get decrepit. I who reflect on my emotions. I who reflect on my personal self. I get decrepit. I get pathetic in old age when I should be wise and brilliant in old age as man or woman. I get decrepit. I decay because I'm still focused on my emotions and my memory, such as I have left. Instead of I being focused on the inexpressible, which you, I, inside that body listening to these words, have knowledge of. And don't tell me you don't, or you wouldn't be here, and you certainly would have got off the chair and walked out by now. What is keeping you here? That's a question. What is keeping you here? It is your knowledge of something greater than yourself. And to be able to listen to a song of love sung by somebody who worships that which is greater than yourself is such a music to you, because you are greater than yourself and you love to hear it. And I'm here to sing that song, because you get out there and nobody tells you the truth. They're all in it for entertainment, to do something, some ceremony. Scientists love the ceremony of the laboratory. They love looking at the stars through a telescope instead of just seeing the stars, seeing everything around you. Now, the wonder of it all within the temple, not the church. Disgraceful things, churches. Make the people unholy. Make the people hard like the churches themselves. Make the people suffer by stories of men being crucified for love. Men are crucified by men. And to be a man is to take your chances, whether you die by crucifixion, being crushed under a lorry for 3 hours before you die, having petrol coming down all over you and someone suddenly igniting it and you only get half burnt to death. Tell me what crucifixion is compared with the other things that men have to suffer. What rubbish are we talking about? What bullshit have you got here? What have you accepted and made a yoke around your neck? And when the Christians speak of Jesus and the realization of Jesus and how Jesus is good to you, it's not Jesus at all, it's God. Jesus himself said, when somebody said, "You are so good," he turned on him and said, "Don't you dare call me good. There is only one good, and that is God." But no Christians ever heard it. They still want to worship him as good. And then they say, "Oh, well, now we've got problems because he was a man and he was crucified and he bled and he's also God." And, you know, they bent over backwards trying to do it to make him a God and also human. And then they had big debates and all the rest of it. If you ever read the true history of the whole of the Christian church, you would be appalled. You would be appalled at the inventions. It's only God. Now, doesn't that simplify things? Well, doesn't it? Well, it simplifies things if you don't make a God of your emotions and you don't make a God of yourself and you don't make a God of your memory and you don't make a God of your sad, sad life. The job of intelligence is to clear the temple. Now, well, now isn't that nice? Isn't that nice, eh? Isn't it nice?